Good evening. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs tonight. You are listening to them. Once again, joining me in studio, Mr. Dwight Schultz. And Dwight, would you believe it is July 15th? Man, it is the middle of summer already.
And now.
You only have 11 shopping days left.
We have.
You only have 11 shopping days left.
I know. Look, I'm not going to tell the audience about your birthday.
Oh.
All right? I'm not going to tell everybody you're older than you look. No. It's a hot, steamy July 9th for more reasons than one.
Yes,
the world is heating up, folks. I'm telling you, the Roswell controversy is blossoming, blooming. It's a hurricane. The fores and afts, pros and cons, are out there.
This week it has been intense, to say the least.
It's controversial, to say the least. Very difficult to say what you're looking at with these photos. If it's a hoax, it is a very, very, very good one. Like my opinion, likely to be one, but I say that hoping that it is not. There have been articles written already to contradict it and call it a hoax. I do not accept the rationales for what I've heard and what I've read. I don't accept the reasoning that I've seen. I will accept good reasoning and good observations as to why this is a hoax. At this point, my suspicions are there, but I will tell you from the photographs, it is quite something.
Well, we have several photographs that we received direct from London, England, from the Maryland group. Plus, I spoke to the people at Maryland just the day before yesterday. We have another entire series of these photographs that are going to be shipped to us. We should have them, hopefully, by the middle of this coming week. UFO Magazine will have the exclusive on these photographs. The way it looks right now, ladies and gentlemen, this National Network special on the alleged Roswell autopsy film will be happening definitely by the very end of August. Now, tonight at 9:30, I am going to have an extremely important announcement. So I want you to please have a pencil, a pen, a piece of paper ready to mark down the information that I'm going to release at 9:30. And it is going to be quite amazing. I think you're going to be very amazed.
It's Hugh Grant's telephone number.
No.
I'm sorry.
Divine Brown.
Oh.
Okay. Tonight's show, we have a very special program lined up tonight. Tonight's program is going to be extraordinarily provocative. Now, in the past, the first time ever that I did a program on lunar and space anomalies right here at the Cable Radio Network on UFOs Tonight, I mentioned a story that I had heard a number of years ago from a contact down in Texas. The story involved allegedly a NASA employee, a woman who had worked at NASA during the Moon program and through the Skylab program at NASA in Houston, that allegedly witnessed some airbrushing of anomalies out of photographs. And according to my source, this individual had had other information that would suggest that NASA had much more information on UFO anomalies than they ever dared breathe. Well, as fascinated as I was in that, I could never locate this individual until just recently. And thanks in a great part to a fellow researcher back in the East Coast by the name of Donald Rash. Donald got in touch with me. As a matter of fact, Donald was very instrumental in getting the STS-48 story out to the world. It was Don Rash that originally turned me onto it. And he's done some great behind-the-scenes work. Well, not this past week, but just 2 weeks ago, he had contacted me and gave me this woman's name, telephone number, said that she would be more than willing to talk. And tonight, you are going to hear and have a chance to speak to a very brave, very gutsy lady, a woman by the name of Donna Tietze, who is presently still residing in Texas, in the great state of Texas, although she no longer is employed with NASA. Now, we know that there are many individuals in the aerospace community that tune into this show.
Yes, we do.
There are a lot.
They call in frequently.
Yes.
I'm sure they're listening tonight.
And I hope they are.
So do
because,
I.
you know, my whole life, Dwight, since I was a small child back in the 50s, when the original Mercury 7 were put together,
yes,
I had the greatest respect, the greatest admiration for NASA.
Same here.
They were the greatest federal agency, the civilian space agency in the government of the United States.
I am to this day furious about how the space agency has been treated. That's my opinion.
Well, the funding that has been cut, I mean, this is our future. But that's not to say that NASA had not been over the years beset with many problems, many of them of their own making. Well, tonight, we are going to speak to a woman who's going to lay the whole thing out for us. So why don't we go to the phone,
please.
Donna, good evening.
Hello.
Are you there?
I sure am.
Well, by golly, you're on the air.
Great.
Hello, Donna. This is Dwight Schultz. I'm
Hi.
Here with Don.
Hi.
Well, Donna, did you hear what I had to say?
Yes, I did. I sure did. Just now, my dog jumped in my lap. So I hear her bark. Just when you got on the line, she jumped up here.
Well, Donna, when you sent me your resume, and you had began working with NASA back in 1967, and I was looking at the section with awards and honors that you received. You received an Apollo Achievement Award from the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. 1973, you received the Skylab Award for the success of the Skylab program, recognition of service award from the Aeronautics Board, July 1975, for support of Apollo Soyuz, which of course was the very first meeting in space by American and Soviet cosmonauts, and we just again, after 20 years, repeated it, now no longer Soviet, of course, but with a Russian cosmonaut. You were in there, by golly, when this thing was really hot and running.
Oh, definitely. Most definitely.
What were you doing when you first, why don't you tell the audience what you were doing when you first went to work for them and what you ended up doing with NASA until you left? And you left, what, at the beginning of the 80s?
Right. I left in, it was about 81. At the first space shuttle mission, I had worked on that and I left shortly thereafter. I started out as a file clerk, filing drawings in 1967. And I worked my way into doing graphic artwork there at Ford. And we worked on site for NASA. I was not directly working for NASA. I was on site working for a contractor. And during that time, I would load film and do all types of artwork. I did the launch slides and landing slides for NASA. In fact, recently in Apollo 13 movie, I recognized some of the slides, the landing slides, launch slides, were very accurate.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yes, extremely accurate. In fact, the Apollo 13 turned flight landing, I had done that artwork. You know, they had given me the coordinates, but I knew it was going to be a bumpy ride coming back, and worked on all of that artwork in Building 8, which was the photo lab. And during that time, I think this happened in 1972. I had a secret clearance, and the reason I had a secret clearance is because I would go into what they call restricted areas, and we still had a lot of people that would do damage to machinery, so we had a lot of secret clearances just for sensitive areas.
You're talking about sabotage?
Well, yeah, even in 72, there was we had to keep people out of areas that were restricted, real sensitive areas, because some things you couldn't touch. You know, if somebody started playing with the computer, might cause a problem with it. And so my clearance basically was so that I could go in areas during mission and to restricted areas.
So they had to do a background check on you?
Oh, yes, yes. I've definitely been through the FBI check way back. Oh, definitely. And anyway, this one incident that happened, there was many, but during one of my days, it wasn't during mission, I went into, I had finished my work and I was walking through the building, and I had a habit of learning other jobs on my down period time so that I could be versatile and work throughout the company. And I crossed the hallway into another restricted area, which was the photo lab, NASA's photo lab. And a gentleman that was heading this particular project up, he was putting together a mosaic. And what a mosaic is several pictures taken by a satellite put into a larger panel from several smaller pictures. And this was a black and white photograph. And when I went in there, I was talking to him. And
this was somebody you know?
Well, it was someone I didn't work with. I just an acquaintance. I walked in and started talking. It was like an open door. I shouldn't have really been in there, because the restricted area I was in, I thought, was my clearance level, but obviously it was a higher clearance level than my area. It was probably so high. See, there's some clearances so high, you're not even told what they are. I mean, it's that secret. And I don't think I should have been in that area. I thought I could go into that area, but...
But you weren't stopped by anybody.
No, And I'm beginning to think that these photographs are so plentiful, they can't really hide them all. You know, this particular picture that I saw, when I went in, the man directed my attention to the spot on the film, and he said, look at that over there. And this mosaic, I say, was about 6 foot by 12 already. It was pretty large. And he said, look at that over there. And I looked, and there was a round, sort of almost elliptical shape. It was a white dot on this black and white film. And I said, is that a spot in the emulsion? And he said, well, spots don't leave round shadows on the ground. And when I looked, I saw that there was a shadow cast from this round dot on the film, and it was in the right angle because the pine trees had the shadows were at the same angle. So it was all proportionally drawn like anything.
Uh-huh.
And I said, what is that? He said, I can't tell you that, but, and he's grinning. He says, but what do you think it is? And I said, it looks like a UFO. And he just smiled, and he said, but I can't tell you that's what it is. And I said, I looked at him because I knew he was playing with me. You know, I knew he knew, but he couldn't say it. He was letting me know he couldn't tell me it was a UFO. And I said, what are you going to do with this piece of information? And he said, well, we have to have that airbrushed out before we sell this product to the public. And I was just, that was my first hint of a cover-up. I mean, that was the first time, you know, I had suspicioned a lot of things being covered up.
Well, do you know what satellite series it was that were taking those photographs, Donna?
No, I don't. I have no idea. See, I had just wandered in there that day. I have no idea to this day exactly what day it was. I can tell you the approximate year.
The Apollo program was still going on then?
Right. Uh-huh. But these were pictures of the Earth. See, this was a craft over the Earth.
Right.
This particular one.
Okay. Now, I'm going to stop you right there because we've got to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to pick up the story from that point.
Okay.
In 1965, Major Edward McDivitt photographed one of these objects near the capsule in which he was orbiting the Earth over the Pacific Ocean. And the photograph, as released by the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, clearly shows a bright egg-shaped thing which leaves a visible trail from its propulsion system.
Well, that, of course, Dwight, was Frank Edwards from over 30 years ago talking about UFOs in space. Donna, did you hear that?
I sure did.
Well, you know, I guess during the mid to late 60s, there were a lot of stories that were coming back about astronaut encounters and what have you. The Frank Borman Gemini 7 thing, this thing with Ed White. Did you ever hear about any of these happenings when you were in NASA?
Well, I had dated a man that had been quarantined the astronaut, and I started talking to him about different things I had seen or heard about, rumors. Rumors go really wild around here, and I wanted to get some verification of what I'd been hearing. So I had asked this man, and I won't say his name, but he told me if I ever told anyone who said it, to say deny it. But he said that every Apollo astronaut had been followed by a UFO saucer.
When you say he was in quarantine.
Right. During the early, when the astronauts returned back from the moon, they would be in quarantine because in those days, they thought they needed to bring a virus back to Earth that would infect everyone.
Uh-huh.
So they would stay in quarantine for a few days when they got back from the mission. And these men would stay in quarantine with them sort of as company and kind of being helpful to them and debriefing and being there for them to talk and talk to them. They confided a lot of really, upfront information before they were debriefed, I guess, not told not to talk. This gentleman told me that they had all seen a UFO and that when we first landed on the moon, there was three craft lined up on one of the craters observing our landing on the moon.
Now, you're talking about Apollo 11. You're talking
about
Neil
11.
Armstrong and Buzz
right.
Aldrin.
Uh-huh. And this, that one in particular.
And that's the Marie Chatelain story, and it's also the story that we just recently heard. Correct.
But he did say that all the Apollo missions had been dogged, or followed or observed, whatever you want to call it. Also, the Apollo 13 mission, now this is also hearsay. Now, I don't know if this part is true, because he didn't tell me this. But some of the hearsay information was that Apollo 13 was going to photograph a certain part of the moon that partially on the backside, a certain area of the moon that supposedly the aliens or somebody didn't want them to photograph. And now, there again, that could be scuttlebutt and rumor. I don't have that firsthand, but that's some of the rumors that I didn't verify through other people. This gentleman did verify, though, the rumors that there had been craft following the astronaut. And that is the first time I had someone besides my own eyewitness account.
Well, are you inferring that because of what Apollo 13 was going to do to photograph this area that allegedly was put off limits, that might have been the reason the craft was damaged?
Exactly.
And where did you hear that at, Don?
Well, this is, when you're working in an environment, people talk. I mean, you hear, I hear a lot of secrets that then I find out years later are true. For instance, people would just talk that our government was even made aware that we shouldn't have done that mission, but yet it still went.
Apollo 13.
That particular photographic series was not supposed to be allowed to happen.
Well, that's kind of mind-boggling. I mean, you're talking about things that are truly mind-boggling. You described earlier by watching someone airbrush
right.
photograph.
Well,
What else have you seen?
Well, another gentleman, that this was later when I was working at a company he helped start. He was a guard, and he came into my office, and he looked very frightened. The gentleman had been a guard at NASA, and he was also a guard at our company. He had a huge gash in his forehead, and he'd heard of my interest and that I had known about these things. So he came into my office, very secretive, and he said he was telling me how he was supposed to burn several photographs of UFOs, of things that, he was instructed to burn them in an incinerator. And at one point, he stopped and looked at one of the pictures and the guard there hit him in the head with the gun butt of a rifle and knocked him out. And he wasn't supposed to look at those photographs.
Just to burn them?
Yeah, he was to burn them, not look at them. And he described the picture he looked at as it was like a craft, a saucer-shaped thing on Earth, on the ground. It had like little bumps all over it, little stand-up bumps, and he said he could tell it was burnt. But what really fascinated him the most was he saw cows standing around in a field behind it with their tails stuck straight up. And he said that he said he never had thought about that, but cattle do have their tails stick straight up when they're frightened. And that's something you can't really fake, make cattle do, if, you know, have their tails stuck straight up. But that's what he had seen. And sure enough, he said he was, and he still had a deep gash in his forehead from that. So I personally have witnessed mounds of photographs just being thrown away, slides. I went and captured some slides they were throwing away. I mean, we're talking copies, but they had to dump a lot of extra photographs and get rid of things. So I know NASA has gotten rid of a lot of things now. I'm sure they have copies stored somewhere. But there are people, and I'm not alone in working in this photo lab. There are other people that have that. See, I was just a lowly worker bee. The higher up bees that got more money were threatened with all kinds of things that they talked. I know of people that work really deep in the photographic process that I cannot tell you their names because they'll get things done to them. Me personally, they never approached me not to talk.
Are you suggesting that if they were to come forward, they might place themselves in jeopardy?
Oh, definitely.
Physical jeopardy?
I believe so. Yes.
From NASA?
I don't think it's NASA directly. I think it's something working inside of NASA.
What
working
about
within it.
The gentleman who you said was struck in the head? I mean,
uh-huh.
do you know the name of that gentleman?
Not right now, I don't, but I could find it out, I'm sure. But I don't think he'd want to come forward. He was terrified, and he shared that with me. I've never seen, I mean, I'll be honest with you, everybody keeps telling me I should be afraid, and I guess I should be, but, you know, maybe I should be. But the people that I know of are terrified. I mean, they must have been approached. I've never been approached to be quiet.
Well, you know, Donna, over the years.
Well, have
now,
you? Well, can I just say, have you ever spoken out on this? Have you,
sir?
Donna? Have you ever publicly come
just,
forward?
Just another talk show in Washington D.C. and at one MUFON meeting. But other than that,
are these recent?
Yes, very.
Very recent.
And I may be told not to talk too. Eventually.
But this is within the last year that you've come.
Right, within the last 6 months. Or less than that, maybe like 4 months.
Well, you know, Donna, one of the things that the skeptics invariably will trot out is that if UFOs are real, we certainly would have had to have seen them in outer space. I mean, we've been going to space now since 1961, since Alan Shepard took his famous 15-minute ride, the first American in space. We've gone from there to the moon. We have, as a matter of fact, tonight we have astronauts in orbit. They will say if there were UFOs up there, then the astronauts surely would have talked about it. Do you buy that?
Well, they're all under strict orders for national security not to talk.
Ah, for national security.
That's the guy. I mean, that's the story. That it may be true. I don't know. Maybe it would cause a panic if people knew the truth. I know that when I've shared some information with people, they go ballistic on me, and I've learned over the years to keep my mouth shut, not from fear of the government, but fear of ridicule, that people are afraid. I mean, just everyday nice people are terrified, and they don't want to know it. They don't want to believe it. And that's one of the reasons I haven't started talking more. And I'm just amazed people want me to tell about it, because I'm thinking, you know, people either want to know, they want to hear it, they believe me, or they don't want to hear it at all or believe it at all. I mean, it's like drastic. There's no in-between types, you know? It's very scary to me because there's something going on, and half the population is stuck their head in a hole.
Would you guess that astronauts even today are seeing anomalies when they're in orbit?
Oh yeah, I believe that. Yes, definitely.
Well, I happen to believe it myself. But what is it do you think that would cause them not to come forward? Now, just recently, on one of the it might have either been encounters, but I think it was the sightings program. which here in the Los Angeles area airs on the Fox network. One of the astronauts, very well-known astronaut, as a matter of fact, he's involved in this present mission, Dr. Story Musgrave,
right,
made an appearance on this program and had been asked about had astronauts ever seen anything out there. And basically he said, well, he had no doubts there was life out there, but just nobody recently, we haven't encountered it. Now, I would have to suggest that if what you're saying is true, this makes him an out-and-out liar.
Well, the way, I want to tell you something. The way it can be kept secret, it's very scary to me because some people, like there could be someone sitting next to me that would have never seen what I've seen in the same building. In other words, it's so well secret or kept secret and so done so well that he may really not believe it or have ever heard it. Because there seems like there's a whole group of something going on that covers it up immediately or shuts the doors.
But from what you're saying, though, that there were people that you worked with that were very aware that there were
weird things going on.
And people do talk. We all know that.
Well, yeah. But it's a subject, though, when you talk about it, people either believe you or they don't want to hear it, and they think you're nuts, and they want to believe you're insane. Because it's easier for them to believe you're insane or crazy than to believe it's true, because the minute they think a higher intelligence is here, they immediately think they're an animal, and these people are going to be some kind of enslaver, you see. And it's a very, I don't know how to explain it. It's sort of like how sex was taboo to talk about years ago in public. This seems to be a taboo subject to talk about in public. But I do know that people have been threatened with their retirement to be taken away from them. They are threatened with their lives. They are threatened if they talk. Well, here's a man that got hit in the head and knocked out, and he knows better than to talk again. And so, you know, I don't know. There seems to be, when your livelihood and your life is threatened, you just back off from it.
Well, basically, when they have you by the short hairs, your hearts and minds will follow.
Exactly. I mean, really,
Donna,
that's it.
We gotta take a break. We're at the bottom of the hour, so hang on.
Okay.
We'll be back in just a second.
Major Patrick Power, long a top man of the Army Space Development Program, said that the first men to the moon must be prepared to fight for the privilege of landing.
And we're back. Donna, did you know that Carl Sagan, Dr. Carl Sagan, one of the largest, biggest UFO skeptics presently alive today outside of perhaps Philip Klass or Dr. James Oberg from NASA in Houston, back in 1962, Sagan was describing the fact that when we landed on the moon, we more than likely would be meeting other individuals up there.
Oh, Sagan said that?
Yes, he did. He said that right here in December of 1962 in Los Angeles at a meeting of the American Rocket Association. He's sure singing a different song now, isn't he?
Well, that's true. But if you notice, some debunkers change and dreams go the opposite way. It's almost as if they wear, it's the same coin with two different faces. What was this, Dr. Heineck? He was a skeptic, and now he's deceased now, but he became a true believer. So I'm not so sure even that Mr. Klass and all of these people, they're at least doing a function by asking a question, and that's a function that may help people become aware that there is such a thing as UFOs out there. To debunk it still brings the subject out in the open to talk about it. And if we're not talking about it, we're not going to ever know that for sure, you know, that it's there.
Well, I agree with that.
So they have their place, even though sometimes I think that they truly believe, because I've met some people, not just Sagan, but I've heard rumor that they do believe. Some of these people, like Klass, I think, believe on some level something's really going on. But, you know, he's making good money being a debunker, you know.
Well, you know, one of the last times I was on Larry King Live on CNN, I was on with Dr. Jim Oberg, who is a NASA contract employee. He was involved in the STS-48 flight, which I was able to break on CNN, and we debated the merits of this case on the air. And Oberg, and I'm sure you know who he is.
Yes, I do.
Oberg made the remark on the air that if any of this stuff was true, that no power in the world could silence the people seeing it. Now, I don't believe that. What are your comments on that?
Well, you see, I believe the same. I believe, like you, that people should be talking, and it takes it to another level, and this is getting very paranoid, but for this massive of a cover-up, I'm not so sure that maybe aliens or some outside intelligence is controlling this. Because it's scary to me to see a world of people walking around like zombies when there's things going on in Mexico and we're not allowed to see it on our own news station. It's like we're being controlled by something, and I have no idea what it is yet. But he's right. People have faith in their government, and to say that their government is covering something up is very scary. It's very threatening to us. But I will say this, maybe it's not our government, but there's something in total control of our media in some areas when it comes to the subject of UFOs. We're not being allowed to know these things. And I'm surprised you're able to have this radio talk show, to be honest with you. Something out there is in control, but I don't know what it is.
Well, to silence, though, you see, the silencing of it was going to... I mean, I believe our government is totally capable of stopping anybody from doing anything if they want to. Oberg's comment on its face is a stupidity. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So you have to realize he said that knowing that that was a dumb thing to say simply to get out of the moment on that show because he was in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah.
But we've just had a secret recently, the Soviet code. Right. We've just announced it in the paper last week through the benefit of, through the work of Senator Moynihan. It's a secret that's been kept for over 50 years. The gentlemen who were responsible for breaking the Soviet code, that's how we knew about the Rosenbergs, said, thank God we can talk about it. They're in their 80s. This secret was kept. It was kept even through in the last few years when there was a renaissance to look at the Rosenbergs and to say they weren't guilty. But that was still kept a secret. And it was kept a secret for a reason.
Excellent point. Excellent. That's excellent the way. There really is.
It was, and they knew about it. There are people in the government who knew the Rosenbergs were guilty, but the evidence could not come out, even in court, because we can keep a secret, folks. There are thousands out there from the 40s on to today who are still keeping secrets.
Well, it seems like there's a cleanup crew that goes around picking the evidence up. I mean, I think there's a big business started, I heard on TV, about the cleanup crime scene.
I saw that, yes.
You see that? Well, I believe that they're cleaning up. You know, if you've noticed that a lot of people that report a sighting or a close encounter, they have these men in black come to them. I believe it's our government agents scaring them or trying to keep them quiet from talking. You know, to me, if they're doing a really good job, whatever they're doing, but at the same time, people like Mr. Oberg, he's probably calming some fraction of our society who gets upset to hear these things.
Well, the word ridicule that you used earlier is the key word. They found out very early on that ridicule is the most feared weapon.
1953, they found
that. That is it. We can deal with almost anything. Thank God I'm an actor because ridicule is part of my business. I'm ridiculed every day of my life, so it just rolls off my back.
Only because they're jealous.
Well, but, you know, when you're involved in internal unemployment, ridicule really means nothing. It's true, and I think that's why a lot of people in the entertainment business, like myself, it's easier to deal with these subjects than people who have steady jobs. And I will tell you, I have friends who have been blackballed today because of their beliefs.
Oh yeah.
I know people who are scared to death to ever say that they would believe in anything like this. They keep it a deep, dark secret in their bellies because of the fear of ridicule. The government knows. It's got a very good weapon. It has time, and it has ridicule. And if it comes out and attacks somebody openly, they're defeating their own purpose. The point is, let the ridicule do its work. Let society, a few well-placed critics, can destroy somebody's career.
Donna, do you remember back in 1976 when Jimmy Carter, who was then still a governor, had not yet been elected president of the United States, made a campaign promise that if he were elected, One of the things he would do, because he himself had had a UFO sighting, was to open up all the government files and reveal everything. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Didn't Goldwater say the same thing?
Well, Goldwater basically did, but no one asked him. He has come forward to admit to the LeMay conversation, and basically it was worse than what we had thought was an apocryphal story. That was that he was not permitted to look in the room. No, he was threatened with court-martial. Right. But no one has asked Goldwater about the rumors. Where did he hear the rumors?
Right.
Who said what to make him think that it was real?
Right.
And I believe that's really at the heart of it all. That this was not something. This is not the. He wasn't motivated by cultists. He was motivated by internal military activity, by rumors within the military.
Well, I had a reason for asking.
I'm sorry
that.
About Reagan. Yeah, we got that.
Well, I had a reason for asking that because circa 1977-78, Carter, after he had been elected, went to NASA and requested that NASA open up an investigative agency on UFOs, and they declined. But one of the people that had been contacted within NASA let it slip that NASA and the Central Intelligence Agency had, in fact, had some type of conversations or meetings on the what was considered the joint UFO problem. Do you recall having heard anything about that or anything that might shed some light on it?
I thought the NSA is in control of all of that. That's what I had heard, but the CIA I thought was I didn't know the CIA was involved. I've never heard that.
NSA. I think you're right.
National Security Agency.
Right.
Well, those are the people that have their fingers on all electronic communications, the whole nine yards.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay, we've got to take another quick break, Donna. We'll pick this up when we come back. We're back. Donna, you're back too. Okay, so you think that basically it is the NSA.
Right.
Now, when you were dating this fellow those many years ago back in NASA, how exactly did you broach this subject with him? And what makes you think that he, in fact, was in the know with some of this information he gave you?
Well, because he had been in quarantine, and he had told me that they were all told not to ever talk about it. That the astronauts, all of them were told that they could never say anything about what they'd seen, that they would have their retirement taken away, and basically, well, they looked more terrified than anything else. He did. And he also said that there was a code name for them, was Santa Claus, was the code name for UFOs when they had seen craft. Now, that was for the Apollo mission. And he really had no reason to lie to me because I would say we were dating, but we were just friends. I mean, I had talked about what I had seen in the photo lab, and I had also had been asking some other questions because I think, like you, I'd always been interested in Star Trek and the space program. And when you'd hear things, and when I had seen this of a UFO, a craft, a circular craft with my own eyes, I wanted to start getting information directly from
you,
someone.
You personally had a sighting?
For me?
No, she's talking about the pictures.
The photographs.
The photographs. And so, you know, I wanted to find out, and I figured he would know, being in quarantine with him. And sure enough, they did talk, and they talked when they came back. They unloaded a lot.
Did you ever personally have the opportunity to meet any of the astronauts?
Yes, I did briefly. Working in the photo lab, I was also the dental lab was there. And the dental technician was really sweet, and she and I were friends. And she would bring the different astronauts, and I would get their autographs. But I never asked them directly. See, I knew. I don't ask people, especially with high clearances. At least I know the protocol is you don't ask people about things. Work. You don't ask about even their clearance.
Well, level. Sure, of course.
You know, and so I didn't ask the astronauts directly anything. I never did because, for one thing, I know right up front they can't talk about it, and it just puts them
Well, let me ask you this, Dwight, because I think you remember this perhaps even better than I do. Do you recall the 25th anniversary of the ceremonies at the White House with Neil Armstrong? Armstrong made a very cryptic remark there.
Very cryptic remark. Basically, he said that the future is more fantastic than we can imagine. If we could only get through certain problems that we had, it was things are there. It was like there are things there, and we could see them if only we could get through some problems we have as a society. It was very cryptic, and a lot of people commented on it. And Armstrong, who is a recluse, I understand, basically just went away and would not comment on what he said. And I think, you know, if he had not meant something to imply something for us to infer, it would have been said more cleanly. It would have just been a simple, it's been wonderful, you know, this is what mankind does. But instead, he chose that occasion to say something very, very cryptic. And he allowed us to interpret. It's almost like a poem, you know.
Right.
This is what I'm feeling, but I can't tell you what it is exactly. Now, the question I wanted to ask was, Gordon Cooper went public. He wrote a letter to the United Nations. And he said, basically, I know these things are real. Let's get to the bottom of it.
Right.
And nothing, I mean, what happened to him? I mean, there were. Did he lose his? He didn't lose any retirement, did he?
Well, I don't know. You know,
Was circa 78 or 79.
But there seems to be a policy change in the recent past. It seems almost that the policy now, the reason I say this is there's more movies coming out. There's a more openness about UFOs. People are not being terrorized like at one time. There seems to be a policy change in this organization that's been controlling information, that now they're releasing information. And to me, what that suggests is that possibly there's going to be mass sightings like that was going on in Mexico, that pretty soon that maybe our government is going to have to fess up. It's not by choice.
Isn't it bizarre with the world internet that we have and the world... I mean, I've been hearing about these mass sightings in Mexico, and I've seen a few, but there's nothing. I mean, I don't...
Our media has carried zero.
Zero.
Right.
Zero.
But you're in Texas, and you have a lot of... Because of all the Hispanic population down there, I'm sure you have a lot of crossover with the news and what have you. Have you personally down there heard on some of the Spanish-speaking TV or radio stations anything regarding this?
Oh, yes. In fact, a lot of times, it's really weird, but they'll start talking about UFO. Of course, it's all in Spanish, but they will
but
talk
you speak,
about
I know you speak Spanish, Donna.
Well, I understand a little bit more than I don't speak it, but I do understand it pretty well, and not that well. I need to get back into it. I have to get immersed in it again. I've been out of it for years. But they'll start talking rapidly about it. But they only show photographs. And to show you how plentiful they are down there, I went in to San Posale, and I was picking up my own photographs, and I couldn't find them. So I thought, well, maybe I better look. Maybe I forgot to put my name on the envelope. And I looked in an envelope that didn't have a name in it, and it was pictures in Mexico, because I could tell by the sign. There was a UFO in the sky in these photographs. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I've got to get these photographs, because I could tell they'd been there a long time. You know, they were falling out of the envelope. So I walked over to this lady behind the counter, and I said, look, these aren't mine, but I'd love to have this picture. I said, this is a UFO. And she started looking through them. She says, my God, those are my photographs. They've been here 3 years. So she gave me that picture. But to tell you, it's so plentiful that people now, the kids in my class, I teach bilingual classes sometimes, they'll come up to me, and I don't talk about the subject of UFOs, but I must have a secret sign somewhere, because these small children in third grade or first grade, they'll come up to me and say they've seen these things, and they're just fresh in from Mexico. And they talk about it, UFOs and these beings and all kinds of things. As a matter of fact, as our kids talk about the Ninja Turtles, you know, and it's amazing how one culture is integrating in here that is so aware, but yet the culture that's here, I'm Anglo, but we're just totally narrow vision to what's really going on out there, and So it's interesting. You're right. We are having a lot of submersions.
Well, let me ask you this, Donna, because one of the research projects that I've been involved in up to my eyeballs for the last few years has been concerned with lunar anomalies. Now, of course, the Apollo missions, from what you've said and from what you've indicated, from what you heard at the time, that every one of these missions had company, if you will.
Okay.
And even when they set down on the moon, at least Apollo 11 was viewed by something there. But did you ever hear that there was some type of an operational base with these entities on the moon?
Yes, I had.
What did you hear?
It's been so long, but I had one thing described to me on the dark side of the moon that was spherical and some kind of tower, that it was like a mining operation they felt on the inside, and that they actually had seen it. That's part of what they were going to photograph, I believe.
Did you know that the Russians, when they sent their first unmanned ships up there to photograph the moon, they sent their first missions to the dark side?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. I didn't know that.
Well, did you get this information about this alleged operation from the fellow that you were dating?
I think so. You know, it's been so long. I'll have to be honest. I can't remember because, see, what would happen is when you'd find people that knew about things, you'd share information. But if you found, you know, you test the waters, and if someone wasn't a believer or didn't know about what was going on, you didn't talk about it. It was sort of like a secret society of people that knew what was going on, and who, and when you didn't know what was going on, you didn't share the information. And you knew, I tended to forget who told me what, because it was like I got the information. There was no need to go tattle who told me that, you know. I don't know how to explain it. It was just like a safeguard, I guess.
Well, it's been a lot of years ago now.
Yeah, it's been years. It could have been that particular man telling me that. It very well could have been him. But I can't tell you for sure. Because I knew a lot of people. I knew, you know, I associated with flight controllers and all kinds of maintenance people, you name it. I never got any information directly from astronauts.
Did you ever hear any... hypotheses on what the entire operation may have been geared to from the alleged alien standpoint? What are they doing?
Oh, you mean, well, now this is all stuff that I've been uncovering.
Speculation, sure.
Speculation. I don't have proof of. Well, right now they're saying things about how beings are coming here to do genetic experiments. What I, and combine their race with our race, I personally think they're doing genetics, but I don't think they're combining our race with their race. I think what's going on is that these beings use us for basically clone bodies like us and maybe seed other worlds that are forming. And possibly this may be going on for centuries or billions of years.
What makes you suspect that?
Huh?
What makes you suspect that?
Well, because years ago, I had heard, you see, in the 50s, there were horses being mutilated. And in the 50s, the horses were the only thing being mutilated at the time, and there would be one eye taken out, and surgery on one part of the horse. And I got this idea that they were cloning of animals, I have even heard that people have been found dead with, you know, being mutilated or parts of their bodies taken off or part of their eye. I think now the aliens are dissecting other parts of the body to hide the fact that they're taking one cell out of the brain to clone it. I think there's only one cell you can clone. This is my speculation from what I've been studying and I've been listening over the years. Now I think they're developing ways of taking eggs, sperm, and maybe developing a body and not doing cloning. And I think that they are using people to seed other planets. I have heard a lot of people say, and this may be where Mr. Armstrong is saying this, because most people that have had a contact with these beings are saying they're talking about how our planet is dying, how the ozone layer is going, how the planet's heating up.
Well, I'll tell you what,
you know,
for what it's worth,
you know?
For what it's worth, I just heard on the news that the ozone layer is recovering.
Oh, is it?
Yes. So, we must be doing something right. Hey, we got to take a break. And let me just ask you to hang on. This is truly fascinating stuff. I know that there are going to be a lot of people. They're going to want to talk to you, Donna. We're going to take a break. Boy, that just brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah, I'll tell you, boy. What is that from?
That's from Apollo 13.
Oh, God. See, I haven't seen the film yet. I saw the real thing, but I didn't see the film.
Well, that's a good one. Of course, they don't even mention any UFOs. Well, Donna, why do you think that is?
Human beings.
Maybe Ron Howard doesn't believe in them. What do you think?
Oh, I think he does. I think Ron Howard really does.
Well, before we go in, if we can, I just want to say, Vicki, I thought your landing pad was very good tonight, and I agree with what you say very much. And, you know, we all have a tendency, well, we all get caught up in this, those of us who have a certain kernel of belief in our heads, and there's no proof. And
right.
It's, although there is proof, actually, it's a crazy world. And people who have beliefs are usually taken advantage of. I'm scarred, and I'm not going to allow myself to be taken advantage of again. I don't take things at face value. I wait. I accept what I hear. But I think what you said tonight was very apt. And it's people like you, Donna, who come forward with this kind of information that gives me a little bit of hope that maybe someday somebody will actually walk forward. Somebody like a Gordon Cooper, too, will come forward and say, you know, that woman was right.
But, you know, in every endeavor where human beings are involved, there are these little petty infighting type things. Look at the cold fusion controversy several years ago, Dwight,
sure. At
how these guys, what was their name, Hans and Fleshman,
sure.
Flesher, something like that, were just roundly castigated by their colleagues. The same thing at Jim McDonald back in the 60s, who was an atmospheric physicist, dared to take a look at this subject and was ridiculed, roundly criticized. The poor man apparently was driven to suicide. So, you know, it's kind of... I don't know. It's like when you put a whole herd of animals together. If there's one animal that's a little bit different, you'll notice how the rest of the herd will go after them. It's mm-hmm. it's just the way things are, which is a shame. But we don't have, I guess we don't have a lot of choice. We just have to weather it.
I agree with you. And I mean, I make a little distinction between the cold fusion issue and Dr. McDonald, because McDonald really just said, let's investigate. I mean, the cold fusion episode was one of claims. I mean, they rightfully, they said we have done it, and they hadn't done it. And I think that there is a, when you make a claim like that, there is, you need to be criticized. It's like the Roswell film now. These people need to expect to be taken to task for this film. The people are going to look at it at every little aspect. We started with phone cords and reflex hammers, and we're going to go all the way to the grain of the film. I mean, it's and if it doesn't hold up, then they deserve to be, these people deserve to be prosecuted. But it is a hard world out there, and there are people who just merely tell the truth and are ridiculed and destroyed, as I think McDonald was. I mean, when you suggest that something should be studied and you are destroyed, that's what makes you believe that there's something behind it.
Well, we can see how the mainstream scientific community treats this subject, which, if any subject, should be the subject for an absolute, honest, legitimate investigation. It should be this, how they act when the subject is broached. Now, if you recall, Jim Hobert, when I asked him several very pointed questions, instead of answering the questions, he attacked me.
Yes.
He said, well, you know, at least I'm not on here trying to sell magazines, which, you know, the whole point of the matter is, here was something that was truly unusual. Let's take a look at it. Is it legitimate or not?
And what did Phil Klass say when you told him that it wasn't a weather inversion? You know, BS, BS, and hang up.
Yeah.
there are myths that even the venerated perpetuate. And
one of my degrees is in psychology. One of the things that you learn when you're interviewing someone or counseling them, whatever topic they're very adamant about, they have something there rooted within them that's really bothering them. Either they have, you know, they may have had an experience, or they may believe deep down, but they have to justify it. So when someone gets angry, and this seems to be a very prevalent thing when you mention the subject of UFOs to people, they immediately attack and ridicule and do things like that. So this is a very common thing.
Well, what I say about Phil Klass is that why would somebody run around after a herd of jackasses trying to convince them that you're smarter than they are? I mean, this man and some of the other debunkers, I mean, why would Ober go on give the STS-48 any credence? If it was frozen urine, it would eventually be discovered. I mean, it would die a natural death. Why would Ober go on and give it credence? I think the only reason is that there's fear out there.
A lot of fear. Yeah. A lot of fear.
And who is he working for?
That's right. Who is he working for?
Well, the bottom line is, what is it that they're trying to conceal? I think it goes much, much beyond the fact that we may be being visited by someone from somewhere else. I think that's not the secret.
And also, Don, just to let you know, I think I saw that the STS-48 footage is going to be reprieved on Encounters Monday night. For anyone out there who has not seen this, I saw a little blurb, and I'm not sure who they had commenting on it. It looked like Marie Chatelain. I'm not sure. But
That's the one I set up for.
That's going to be repeated on Encounters Monday night, so if anybody has not seen that STS-48 footage, check it out, because it's fascinating.
Well, you know, I'm sure we have a lot of people out there that have been waiting for this signal, because they're going to want to talk to you, and I am now opening the lines up. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you have been waiting to call, do it now. And let me give you those numbers real quickly, Anna.
Okay.
And as soon as they get up on screen, who in the heck we have there?
And be prepared, Donna, because you're going to get some. Usually, we have a lot of hard questions here, and
I'll try to answer best I can.
We've had a few. I met just last week a technician from NASA in Florida. We had someone call up here about a month ago saying that the Enterprise had been dropped and that it had cracked down the middle, and that's why it hasn't flown. And in fact, I had it verified by a technician down there. She said, yes, it was dropped.
But how do you drop a spaceship?
But she said, it didn't crack. And I said, however, it dropped, huh? That hardware dropped? Well, I think that's enough.
How do you drop a space shuttle?
Very
carefully.
As long as you're not underneath us, you know, I mean.
Well, let's start hitting the phones. We've got Larry calling in from Tuhunga on King Cable. Good evening, Larry.
Good. Hey, how you doing?
We're fine.
Good. Listen, I just had a couple of quick questions for Donna.
Go ahead.
First of all, Donna, thanks a lot for being on the radio. A lot of people wouldn't do that, so I think I can speak for a lot of people who really appreciate it. I just had two quick questions that tie into the research that I'm doing. When you were working at NASA, did you ever have the opportunity to meet any or interact with any scientists?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah, Donna, can you speak up a little bit?
Yes, I did. And let me tell you this much about that. I can't talk about that.
Okay.
That's the only thing I can talk about.
I didn't want to ask any specific questions as far as who you talked to or anything like that. My question just centered around, did you ever hear any rumors of these beings being from alternate dimensions or alternate timelines? Because that ties into the research that I'm doing.
Most definitely. In fact, one scientist told me that he was doing an investigation, and he's done quite a bit of work in that area. And most definitely. And how I found out, it wasn't directly from him. I just did his work. But I have found out from other people that his work is a success. And
his work is a success?
Right. So that's, you know, I found out through other people that had worked with him in the project, and found out through a grapevine that some of his work is a success. So
dealing with interdimensional
quantum mechanics and stuff. Good.
Okay. Well,
and I don't mean to be cryptic, but this person, I just don't want to get him in trouble. I don't want to expose anything on that, because that I do believe in.
You're afraid that it might identify him, which could open him up for... Okay. Okay, Larry, did that do it for you?
Yeah, I might be barking up the right tree for a change.
Thanks, okay, bye. You bet. Hang on there. Keep those eyes to the skies. Donna, God, these breaks, they keep coming. And, that phone's already jammed up again. So hang on a second. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Still another oddity known to exist on the moon is that of the objects called moon domes. These are circular, white, hemispherical spots which are at just about the limit of telescopic visibility. They're probably 600 feet in diameter. It was once thought that these things were hills, or perhaps tiny volcanic cones. But subsequent study revealed that the mysterious domes sometimes vanished in one area and appeared later in another. What they were, and why they seemed to be hopscotching around on the bleak lunar surface, no man can say.
Clearly they were Ralph's grocery stores.
You think so?
I'm positive.
I was going to suggest 7-Eleven.
No, Ralph's.
Or McDonald's.
Well, maybe.
Well, you know, McDonald's is in Russia.
Yeah,
why not the mall?
No, Ralph's is everywhere.
The Golden Arches,
do I? No, these are not. These are done. Maybe it's Penn Fruit. Does anybody remember Penn Fruit? Sorry.
Go ahead. Can we go back to the show now? Is it all right?
I had it just now.
Okay. We've got, Donna, we've got you back. Let's take some more phone calls. We're going to go, to Burbank this time, because we have Mark on there joining us from Salmons. Mark?
Good evening, Don.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Great show tonight.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to ask Donna, your speculation was that they were taking people away to use them as workers.
No,
is this from
necessarily.
Things you heard at NASA and government people over the years, or how'd you come up with that?
Well, since then I have started studying, reading up on abductions and mutilations, and I found, I've just studied this phenomenon on my own, special interest. Things that abductees or contactees are told about birth changes and all of this sort of thing. And I started thinking, if these beings felt our world was coming to an end, why wouldn't they be saving certain, people, or say saving our race,
specimens
of the planet? I personally, we as individuals, when a race or something or a species is going to extinct, we try to save them and move them into another environment or something like that. So maybe I'm just putting too much of a scientific twist on it all, but that's what I hope they're doing rather than something clandestine.
Have you read any of Zechariah Sitchin's books?
I don't believe so.
Because he traces back Adam to an ancient word, and meaning, which means worker.
Oh, really?
Primitive worker.
Yeah. Yes, and these were genetic manipulations between, not human species, but Earth species and species from somewhere else.
How did you know that?
But that wasn't anything you had heard at NASA then?
No, that was, you had asked me, what did I think? And that was strictly on my own, what I've been picking up and reading about. I like to hear true accounts, or accounts that people have had when they've had a close encounter or been abducted. Because, to me, there seems to be a pattern of information forming of what people are saying. And, so that's what I look at, is a pattern, and then I try to draw conclusions from that.
Donna, they're waving at me from the control booth. They need you, if you can, please, to speak up just a little bit.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Sure. Is that good?
Oh, boy, are they waving at me now.
is that good?
That's better, yeah.
Okay, great.
Now, I'm not going to say what they were doing with their middle fingers.
Oh, no.
Oh,
their thumbs, Don.
Don.
Okay. Hey, we've got to move along. Mark, I want to thank you for your very, very timely call.
Again, great show tonight. Everything she comes up with new just opens up almost a whole new vista.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay. Now, we're going to go to, let's see, Escondido. I think we have David on there. Is that correct? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, we've got Jim.
Hi.
Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Oh, Jim from Eagle Rock.
Yes, not Escondido.
Okay.
Somewhere I wasn't before.
I've got two lines up there, both showing line three, and one was David, one was Jim, and we got Jim. So, okay.
Yeah, welcome back.
What's your question, Jim?
Thank you. Do you know about code names in the Apollo when they were on the moon sending transmissions back?
Yes, there was a whole series. We had a whole department that took transmission, and well, like I said earlier, I had heard that the code name Santa Claus was given to the UFOs or, unidentified.
Yeah, but I have some words I want to pass down and see if you heard of.
Okay.
Santa Claus, also Arnold.
Arnold?
For aliens on the moon.
Arnold?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds familiar, but I didn't know that.
And how about, at least from the Apollo 8 mission on, Barbara for buildings on the lunar surface?
No, I don't know that.
There was
I'm not saying it's not true. I just don't know that.
Yeah, because there was some of the old ham operator guys. There was a lot of, there's Barbara on the hill. Would come down a lot on what they were pulling off.
Hmm.
Barbara Arnold, which I guess was supposed to be aliens, and Whiskey Bravo. And also, my second question was, if that's the case, were they sending stuff, transmission down the medical channels instead of across the straight channels when they were doing it on TV?
Well, from what I understand, there was a certain channel they sent secret transmission to NASA. Now, I was under the impression ham operators could pick it up.
Yeah, they did. I know a couple that did.
Yeah, but supposedly the medical channels...
Well, not the medical.
Well, the medical channels were private. And incidentally, this is a great time because I have here six radio links for people with shortwave radio and with scanners and perhaps ham radios, where they can pick up the NASA links right now for the missions. This is a great time to read these off. Let me do it real quickly.
Okay.
And for you folks out there, get your pencils and papers. If you have scanner or ham radio or some type of shortwave radio capability, this is where you can tune in directly to hear what's going on, even as it happens. 145.460, 123.725, 448.500, 446.575, 147.150, and 448.375. And those are the frequencies, if you have ham radio capabilities or scanners or shortwave, that you should be able to tune in live to hear what's going on. And incidentally, we have a line that is open right now. Jim, did you have anything else?
No, I was just writing all that down for my friend who is a ham operator.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
well, tell him so. KE6RVO says hey.
Oh, okay.
73s and all that.
Yeah, okay. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. Okay,
thanks,
Jim.
Okay.
Take care.
Good to hear
you. Dwight, did I tell you about my antenna lately?
It's the very big one.
Yes.
You have a very big antenna.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it's very big. It's on top of the roof.
I knew you were impressed.
I saw the antenna.
Okay, let's take
it. It's the biggest antenna I've ever seen.
Let's go to, now we've got David in Escondido. David, good evening.
Good evening, Don. Boy, you guys sure have an attitude tonight. I'm impressed. I'm another radio amateur. One thing about those frequencies, by the way, you do hear the audio live, but it's not necessarily unfiltered. That's the retransmitted, relatively public audio.
That's right.
You're correct.
They have to have a secure line, and
yeah,
they have always had a secure line.
That's one of the reasons why they launched the tracking and data relay satellite. That's where that stuff goes more directly.
Right.
A couple of comments. One is the autopsy photos have been all over the network. You're
right.
Probably aware of that.
Yes.
And they're on the Encounters forum that you guys have in CompuServe.
Yes.
So there are quite a few pictures there. It's interesting. I got two of them up on my screen right now. And some of them are left-right reversed.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, some of them look like they've been shot off of TV cameras or, TV screens.
German, it was a German television thing.
One of them, though, looks more like it was done more directly by scanning the film. So they're a varying quality. So look around it. Don't just assume there's one source.
We are getting next, we should have them next week, by the middle of the week, direct from Merlin, some exclusive photographs taken directly from this alleged footage. So I am hoping that by next Saturday's show, Dwight and I will be able to give a much more complete briefing on that.
Well, we've already seen slides from the 16 millimeter, directly off the 16 millimeter. So copies for what they are. I mean, they're very good. And as I say, some of the controversy here, I've already read two articles which state they are positive with hoaxes, and I am, and one of them is Richard Hall, who I adore Richard Hall and what he's stands for and what he's written. But I have a very difficult time accepting the reasoning that he gave for dismissing it. Not that I believe in it, because I think it's likely to be a hoax, but I don't understand what I have read so far, because I can see no... it's not a clearly, to me, a human-altered female cadaver. That is not true.
I would look at the same thing and say it doesn't look that way either, but it's certainly a mystery.
It's a mystery.
Well, as a law enforcement, as a former law enforcement officer, and I have been to a number of autopsies, Dwight has been to some autopsies, and there are...
I had a beer at an autopsy.
Did you really? There are similarities with these photographs that just strike me as absolutely correct, that this was, in fact, a genuine autopsy situation. This cadaver... has the slackness in death, if you know what I mean. If you've ever seen a human being before, you know, it goes through the process at a funeral home or whatever.
Sure.
This body was severely traumatized. There are severe wounds on this cadaver. The stomach is distended to a great degree, perhaps from lying, you know, if in fact the stories are true about lying in the desert sun and what have you. And there are tremendous bruising and wounds on this body.
I'm looking at it now, and one of the things that strikes me is that if that were true, one concern I see is I don't see any lividity. And if you've ever actually seen a body that's lying on its back, there's a significant transition in the color of the body top to bottom.
Yes.
Of course, who knows what the history was or what reality is, but...
But look at the wound in there. I have known... people that were wounded in various parts of their bodies that ended up dying and what have you, and the reason they died was because of a great loss of blood.
That's very true.
And by the looks of the wounds on this particular being, I don't want to say person, I don't want to say alien, but this being, there were tremendous wounds in this body.
Yeah, they could have exsanguinated from that kind of...
Yes.
Also, if you notice, I don't know if you can see, hand is severed.
Yes, I was noticing the wrist.
Yes.
Right. We are past. We got to take a break. David,
yeah.
I'm gonna have you stay on.
Okay, I got two quick things for you when you're back.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. Donna, hang in there.
All right.
We haven't forgotten you.
Oh, no problem.
And we will be back in just a moment.
Dr. Carl Sagan, advisor on extraterrestrial life to the armed services, said in December of 1962 that man must be prepared to face the probability that we have already been visited by beings from elsewhere in the universe, and that these beings have, or have had, bases on the averted side of the moon, from where they can easily see us.
Well, we're back. thank you. Don, I wanted to say something. You know, the one thing these photos don't show about the aliens, they don't.
No, wait a minute.
They don't show an alien hiney.
I was going to ask you if this is fit for human consumption.
I always wanted to see an alien hiney, and it's not on these photos. And I don't. I'll bet you anything that it's not on the 16 millimeter film.
Now,
that's not real.
I never.
It's one of the reasons I suspect this is being a hoax.
I see.
Because the first thing that any military person would do would turn it over and shoot the hiney.
Thank you, Dwight.
Okay.
I want you to know that was certainly profound.
Well, I'm saying.
Let's go back to our guest, Donna. Are you still there?
I don't know
why you would still be here after that. And let's get David back on here to see what else was on his mind. David?
Just a couple of quick things. I guess that Dwight is looking to get mooned by these.
You were following my drift.
I know, it took a while. One thing, by the way, you're a very interesting guest there, Donna, and John, that you both do that is irritating to us KitKat space types is to refer to that other side of the moon as the dark side. I'm sure you know it's the far side.
Or it's the averted side.
You have a lot of ways to say it, but dark side says you're a mere earthbound
tourist. But that's so easy. That's easy to say that.
Dark side means what? When I say that, what?
The dark side.
It's Star Wars.
Oh, really? No, because I learned that when I was little.
It's the dark side of the Force, David.
I guess. What can I say? Donna, I've got one quick question for you.
Sure.
You were at the Johnson Spacecraft Center?
Yes.
You were there in the early 70s?
Yes. Well, all through that. Well, I worked on site sometime in Building 8, sometime in Building 30, and then sometime off site.
Do you have to remember who the head of engineering was at that time?
At JSC. In our company, or?
Were you were a contractor?
Right.
Ah, okay. Okay. Do you remember who the NASA head of engineering for JSC?
Crab.
There's a guy named Max. I didn't know if you happened to ever run into him.
No, if I
didn't. Fage?
Oh, the name's familiar.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know the first one. He
holds the patents on the shape of some of the basic spacecraft that were sent up there. I didn't know if you'd run into them or not. Interesting story, and I hope that you can help Don in the resolution of mystery.
That is it. The resolution of mystery. It is. That's exactly.
We keep pursuing it, David.
All right.
Hey, thanks so much. Keep those eyes to the skies. We're going to move to Glendale. We have another David calling in on Salmons. Good evening, David.
Hi, I really appreciate your show, Don. I watch it all the time. I'm probably one of the very few people in Glendale that does, though.
So why is that?
Well, my brother and I. Well, it's a pretty conservative place.
Oh, really? Do you think we should go over there, perhaps, and do some street theater?
Yeah, well,
maybe you take Dwight with us.
Something, right?
Dwight could go over there and howl at the moon or something.
Well, what I wanted to ask you was, you brought up the question of why is the whole alien visitation thing so top secret? And as far as you know, what's really behind it, and why are they scared to death to reveal it? And you know, here's something to think about: what if some of the visitations, or many of the visitations, are actually from angels? And I'm no religious fanatic at all, but as in like the Betty Andreas abduction.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, Michael Lindemann, for some time, has been involved in UFO research, and just recently, he has decided to take a swing toward the angel question. Now, I certainly am no one to pass judgment on angels, God, you know, or anything.
Sure.
But I keep much more, geared toward the strict nuts and bolts.
But in the Betty and Dresden thing, they're nuts and bolts as well as they go into other dimensions. So it's kind of like, are they here? Are they there? And do angels appear here?
Well, you know, David, one of the things that I have learned over almost now going on 10 years that I've been involved in this full time, all the time, 95 hours a day, is that whatever happens, there is, without a doubt in my mind, a manipulation of perception.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's behind this phenomenon, the intelligence, I think, is able to manifest itself in practically any way it chooses. And what better way?
Scary though, right?
Yeah, what better way to manipulate human beings than to come in the guise of a religious experience?
And that's like Bramley. Have you read Bramley?
He's been a guest on this show.
Ah, yeah, I haven't been listening for that long. But, well, here's just one thing to think about. You know, the Sumerians called the Ajiji those who watch and see, you know, in Sitchin's book.
Yes, yes.
And the Egyptians had the watcher gods.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is I ran across in Daniel that angels were also called watchers.
Yes.
So that's been fascinating me recently, looking all this stuff up.
And if you read the biblical references to suspected angels, for example, when Lot, before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, by the three angels. If you recall,
right,
when he saw them, and there was nothing special about them as far as wings or, you know, that's all garbage.
Well, wings, yeah.
Yeah, that's all garbage. But he did recognize that they were messengers,
right,
from the Lord God, and he did take them to his home and offer them a feast, which seems to suggest that they were as corporeal as you and I.
Exactly.
So, you know, there are a lot of strange questions there.
Well, see, that would open up a huge can of worms. I think when that's investigated more, that might be, if, you know, just getting people to think about it, the government would be very frightened of that.
Oh, sure. Well, there's I think, a tremendous amount of reasons why our government would be frightened. Look, we've got to roll along, but David, I want to thank you.
Thanks
for
your call.
Sure. Please keep listening. Tell some more of your friends
about
it.
Well, it's my brother and I.
Well, there are others in Glendale. I know there are. I know it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, we're going to go to Toluca Lake. We have Sharon calling in on Simmons. And, you know, we haven't had anybody from around the country that many. No national calls tonight.
It's very strange.
I wonder what
it's
the
very
deal
strange.
Is. Nobody from New York?
I
nobody
don't know.
From Florida?
It's bizarre.
Oh, well.
Because we always have national calls.
Sharon.
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening. I enjoy your show a lot. I have a special affinity for this subject and have ever since I was a small child. You know, it happens that often I will go through periods of time where I almost become obsessed with the subject, and then I'll kind of back away from it. I have a feeling that it's a little bit of fear.
Well, thank heavens you found us then, huh?
Yes. When I was a small child in the late 1940s in Seattle, Washington, my parents took us to a small community out in the woods by a lot of lakes. And I could see clearly, I could see Mount Rainier from our back door all the time. And it was when I was about 3 years old that I was awakened late at night by a visitor in my room. And I think this happened a couple of times. And I wonder if you get many calls from people who describe a visitor when they're a small child. And
oh, yeah, we have. We have had we've been broadcasting now for 4 years. And over the years, yes, we have heard from many people. As a matter of fact, I've done a number of programs with various researchers into the abduction phenomenon, Yvonne Smith, David Jacobs, Bud Hopkins, along with people that have alleged to have undergone this experience. And almost invariably, they all talk about visitations when they're very small.
This particular being, I believe...
Well, I'll tell you what, Sharon. I've got to ask you to hold that thought for a moment. We've got to take a break.
Thank you.
And Donna, if you can hang on once again. Okay. We'll be right back. We have a couple of open lines right now, so if you've been waiting to call in and you haven't been able to get through, do it now because... Okay, we're back. We're going to go back to Donna. We're going to go back to Sharon. But where are you people in New Mexico, Florida, New York,
Texas.
Oregon, Texas,
Vermont,
Illinois, Vermont,
New York City?
What are some
Virginia.
Of the other states that we
Virginia.
Get calls from? Yeah, I can't believe this. We haven't had one national call tonight.
It is very bizarre.
That blows me away.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe there are
speaking. Maybe this is an L.A. story.
Okay, Sharon, are you there?
Yes, I'm
okay.
here.
Okay.
Well, thanks for getting back to me. I realize there are other people that want to call, so I don't want to take too much time, but I wanted to say a couple things and ask a question. First of all, this being had a green color. Its skin was kind of a lime green, kind of fluorescent and glowed, kind of like there was light coming from underneath it. And there were... moments that I don't remember. I remember being in one position at one time and then, you know, in another position another time. And then later I had difficulty with my belly button and my rectum. I was having trouble. Apparently I had to have some operations because I was bleeding. And I just wondered if anyone had ever experienced anything like that.
Well, yes.
Okay.
That's an
We'd
answer.
Have to say yes.
But the green glow is not typical.
But the examination, troubles with the belly button, rectal bleeding, bleeding in other parts of the body, the nose, the mouth, the ears, all of that has all been reported.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, please, please.
Just recently I went to Hufon meeting here, and Daryl Sim was, there are reports now being seen that glow, and just what you described, and I'd never heard of anything like that until just about a week ago. And one of the things Daryl Sim does is use the black light, and usually after an encounter with the beast, there are certain symbols and things on you that will glow. So you can test yourself by getting one of those little black lights, and you'll see that if you've had an encounter or visitation.
Well, I got to tell you something, Donna.
That's what he said.
Okay, I got to tell you something. And then we have to move on. But at the UFO Expo West here, there was some talk about this. And young lady was brought in. They put a black light on her. She, in fact, did glow, had supposedly been abducted and what have you. But then, according to the investigator, this phenomenon wears off real quick, so they painted her up with fluorescent paint. And to me, that just ain't no truth in advertising, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, he does paint people to show a demonstration of how it works.
I prefer the real thing and not Memorex. We got to move along. Sharon, thank you.
Can I just say one more thing?
If you make it real quick.
Okay. It was in 1976. I was living in Coldwater Canyon, and I saw that same color green, a huge sphere of green light. I mean, it was huge, coming down from the sky. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning. I must have been the only person up at that hour coming home from a party.
Wait a minute. You were at a party?
Yeah.
Were you doing any illicit substances?
No.
Were you doing any legal illicit substances?
At that time, I was probably drinking some wine.
Ah, okay.
Why?
Oh, just curious.
Do you think I was hallucinating?
I don't know. I was trying to make a poor joke.
Okay.
But we have to go.
Thank you.
Okay, right. You have a good one. We're going to go to Darius, who's in Hollywood Hills on Century. Darius, good evening.
Yes, good evening. It's only the second time I've heard the show, but I think it's really excellent, and I hope it goes on a long, long time.
Well, thank you.
The question I had is regarding the prototypical drawing of alien greys that we've all seen in magazines. I was wondering if you've heard of any scientific studies that might have been done regarding examining the features and extrapolating a theory about what their home planet might be like physically.
Yes, we have. I don't know, however, if it came from strictly a scientific source. But a number of years ago, one of the places that were hypothesized that at least some of these alleged visitors may have come from was from the Zeta Reticulum star system, which is a binary star, which includes Zeta Reticulum and Zeta Reticuli 2. These two stars are roughly, I believe, within a half light year to a light year apart from each other. Zeta Reticulum 2 supposedly has a planetary system where some of these aliens originate from. Now, is any of this legitimate? Is any of it true? Well, I don't know. We can't even see Zeta Reticulum from the Northern Hemisphere. You have to go down to South America to see it. But an alleged, supposed covert government intelligence source that goes under the code name of Falcon. And this was on a two-hour special back in 1988 called UFO Cover-Up Live. This alleged intelligence source came forward through William L. Moore, a very controversial UFO researcher. And this guy had a lot of information supposedly about these creatures. But none of this, and I stress none of this, has ever been verified. The only thing we have to go on is his testimony. Nobody knows who the hell this guy even is or if he's legitimate or not. One of the things that he did say about these creatures that the government knew was that they liked strawberry ice cream. Okay.
But other than that, I mean, we have nothing else to go on. So.
Well, that's very interesting.
He did mention the Zeta Reticulum star system, and these large black wraparound eyes evolved because of the brilliant, intense sunshine and radiation. This was the story.
Oh, I see. Because I was thinking that maybe the large black eyes might indicate that they would thrive in low light conditions because they have to gather in more light to see.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, because there's been no verification that these things are real, this is the first time that I know of that there's reportedly an actual body to study. It's no way of saying where they came from, and they are humanoid. I mean, they clearly are capable of operating in our...
Well, now, one of the things about this alleged autopsy film that it does show, and I was told this by a number of people that have seen it, that at the beginning of the autopsy, this creature and Dwight, as you know, looking at these slides that I brought in, you can see the large black lenses over the eyes. The doctors or the pathologists do remove these lenses during the autopsy from the cadaver, and underneath are what appear, I was told, to be very normal appearing eyes.
Much larger, however, than they look human, but much larger. So they're quite large. So it's just larger.
But hopefully we'll see at least some of this autopsy film in the very near future.
Hopefully.
Okay. Well, did that answer your question?
It sure does. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, let's see. Donna, we are going to go now to Seal Beach. We have Pat on there joining us from Comcast. Pat, good evening.
Hi, Don?
Yes.
I just called to talk about the authenticity of the film from Roswell.
Yes.
You haven't seen it yet, have you?
No.
The autopsy.
Right.
No, I have not.
I was just wondering, did it include footage of the president of the time, President, was it Roosevelt?
No,
Truman.
It was Harry Truman.
Truman, I'm
sorry. We have heard rumors and speculation about that, but I know of no one at this point that definitively saw Harry Truman in any of these films.
I thought you said you did. I was listening to some of your shows.
Well, heard some rumor about that.
Right.
But I've talked to a number of people that, as a matter of fact, I just spoke with British researcher Philip Mantle yesterday, I believe it was. He called me from the UK, from the United Kingdom, and that was one of the questions I specifically asked him, because we had heard rumors. And he had seen right now all the all the film that has been developed from the original negatives, and he has not yet seen anything that would suggest Harry Truman was there.
Yeah, I was just wondering also, if anybody were, the people who did the autopsy, the people who were working there, if anybody around nowadays would even recognize some of the people who did the autopsy, they can say, well, yeah, this says it's 40 years old or whatever.
That's right. And there are, evidently, however, I've been told that Don said this, that there are clearly recognizable people now on the film. So
they have recognizable people.
Well, not anybody that we know, but Philip Mantle told me that there are, in several scenes, very identifiable faces that are not covered up, but, you know, that in fact are on the film.
So this would be fodder for researchers to go back and find out if they can find that face in a book.
Yeah, what is it going to air?
Well, the way it looks right now, and if you have been around any time at all, if you caught our show a number of weeks ago, we had Robert Kiviat on, who is the executive producer on this. The projected date right now is the end of August. But as we know more, believe me, we will give it out on the show.
It is airing in Great Britain on the 28th of August. So if you have enough money for a plane ticket. But it is airing. They have an air date over there.
We're out of time. Thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Well, hey, Pat, we've got to move along. I want to thank you for your call. Keep those eyes to the skies. And Donna, we have just a minute or so before we are out of time. Did you have any last thoughts or words that you wanted to share?
Well, I just want to thank you for letting me share with your audience, and I wish more people would come forward, because we all can't be shut up. I mean, we all come forward. Everyone that knows, they can't be quiet anymore. We've got to do it.
Well, I think time is running out, at least on this secret. You know, in the last couple of years, and Dwight and I have talked about this on many occasions, you know, one of the things that the skeptics and debunkers invariably say is the fact that nobody can keep a secret like this for all these years. The fact of the matter is, they have, they do, there it is. Donna, I want to thank you. We're going to do this again.
Thanks.
Please take care.
Good
God
night,
bless.
Donna.
Keep
thank
those
you.
Eyes
thank
pointed
you,
up.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Don.
You bet. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for another week. My name is Don Ecker. Dwight Schultz, Vicki Cooper Ecker, and all the crew wish you the very best. We'll be back in a week. Remember, keep those eyes pointed to the skies, because sooner or later, the truth will win out.
Where was the rest of the country tonight?